This is the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. This show examines the latest legal topics and news facing families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. It is hosted by lawyers Rob Schenck and Will Smith of Schenck Smith LLC, a personal injury law firm based in Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome to the show.
Hello out there, and thanks for joining us. My name is Rob Schenck.
And I'm Will Smith.
And we are trial attorneys in the state of Georgia practicing in the areas of nursing home abuse and neglect, and we happen to be your co-hosts of this, the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast, episode 33. We've made it to 33 episodes.
Yay!
That would be the equivalent of, I think, like, two seasons of a sitcom.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if this is Seinfeld, we haven't quite hit the critical mass of viewership, but we're really coming into our own in terms of the content.
Yeah, so it's kind of like that movie that show that you liked with Nathan Fillion, Firefly, that was on Sci-Fi. It lasted two seasons and then was taken off, and then people like you, like, I guess you call yourself Fireflyings or something like that. Anyway. Yeah, so we now have cult status.
Right. Right. Which that was also made into a movie that you picketed called...
Serenity.
Serenity.
Yeah.
You said that it wasn't... You picketed outside the movie theater because it wasn't...
True to the original...
True to the original TV series.
Yeah, yeah. The same thing that you did with Battlestar Galactica, the reboot.
Battlestar Galactica has a high female viewership. All right, so we're really coming into our own in terms of content, and I think that this episode is no exception. Episode 33. Today we're going to be talking about the four things to do if you suspect that your loved one has been a victim of nursing home abuse or neglect. The four things that you should do if you suspect that your loved one has been abused in a nursing home. We get this question a lot, actually. Our clients walk in the door with potential claims and they don't know where to start. Sometimes it's the injury that they suspect it happened months ago, years ago, a week ago. It just depends. But by and large, these are four of the things that we would recommend that you do if you suspect negligence or abuse.
Yeah, absolutely.
The first one is...
And just so you understand, the first and the second are done essentially contemporaneously together, but still...
So some would say that that's one thing to do and not two different things.
We had a disagreement on whether or not these were two things or one thing in a subcategory,
but nevertheless, for the sake of ease of listening, we've divided these into four steps. The first step in what we tell people if they suspect abuse or neglect in a nursing home is to tell the staff
or discuss it with the staff
of the nursing home.
Even though you think, for example, you go in there and your mother has a bed sore, let the charge nurse know. Let the director of nursing know. Should they know? Yes. Do they know? Maybe, maybe not. But either way, you need to make sure that you put them on notice. Hey, listen, this needs to be taken care of. Because your ultimate goal in any of these situations is not, and I repeat, it is not to have a good legal case. You don't want to have a good legal case. You want your loved one to be injury-free.
That's right.
And healthy. So try to prevent them from being in a situation where they have a good legal case.
So some because, and that's the point, is the ultimate goal is that your loved one is healthy.
Yeah.
So, you know, pointing to the nursing home and saying, hey, here's a bed sore here, is not guaranteed, but likely to, get the squeaky wheel greased.
Yeah.
And possibly prevent that bed sore from developing even worse, going to
Stage three, stage four, unstageable.
Right. So now you could keep that information to yourself and the bed sore could get worse, but you don't want that.
No, you don't want that.
Right. So getting information from the staff, maybe the staff had turnover and maybe the third shift person doesn't know about your mother's bed sore. Maybe, you know, something's happened where, you know, it's not an all hands on deck situation, but making the staff aware of what's going on oftentimes takes care of the issue. If it's, I'm not going to say an innocent mistake, but if they're, if all things being equal, if you point to their attention, a lot of times it'll get taken care of. It should get taken care of. It's also, we say this time and time again, it's really good to get on a first name basis with the individuals that that care for your loved one. Know this, who the CNAs are. Know who the director of nursing is. Even if possible, know who the administrator is.
Absolutely.
Because oftentimes we find that the more that you're involved in the day-to-day operations of that nursing home, particularly as it pertains to the care that your loved one receives, the less likely it is that they're neglected or abused because they know that somebody's coming around and being a watchdog. So anyway, that's a side tangent. But if you suspect anything, get involved. Get involved soon. Schedule appointments. Schedule meetings. Take it all the way up to the top brass. But if you suspect nursing home abuse or neglect, that's what we recommend the first thing to do. And again, it's because it's exactly as Will said, it's because you're not necessarily trying to build a claim, you're trying to make sure that your loved one is cared for properly.
Yeah,
and that is a situation where it can be sometimes you may come along and the injury is catastrophic and there's nothing that you, I mean, you could do to alert anybody.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you in a situation where, you know, you walk in and your mother, you know, is deceased
or in massive septic shock.
Yeah, like there. Yeah, so you're gonna skip some parts. But so the next one would be
the next thing that we recommend that you do if you suspect nursing home abuse or neglect.
Yeah,
is
documents. So and documentation,
gathering evidence,
So that includes, look, a picture is worth a thousand words. If especially when you're talking about bed sores or
bruises, abrasions,
cuts, anything like that, if you take a picture, take as many pictures as you can, because if I've got a picture of the bed sore that you're talking about, it's really going to help me convince the insurance company, hey, listen, this is what a jury's going to see. So that's extremely helpful.
And along with that, a little side note, when taking pictures, I highly recommend that you make sure, because oftentimes this will be done with your phone, but to make sure that that gets uploaded to someplace safe, because there have been at least a few occasions in my experience as an attorney that there were pictures taken with the phone, but at some point along the lines, that phone was dropped in the toilet.
Yeah.
It was, it was dropped on the ground.
Lost, stolen, anything.
Anything. So it's important to save those photographs and to document them appropriately. So like making sure that, you know, you're looking at the, if it's a bed sore, make sure that, and there's multiple bed sores, make sure that you document which bed sore we're looking at. What part of the body is this picture?
And what date did you take this picture?
What date did you take the pictures? All these type of things. Will help out in the future down the road. But the most important thing is making sure that picture gets saved to a location that's safe. Like, it's not safe if it's just on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
So photographing is important. If there's any possibility that someone has witnessed the abuse or neglect, that's important too. So oftentimes, I think, I don't know what the percentage is, it's very high, if your loved one's in a nursing home, they're sharing their room with another resident, and that resident has family, or that resident might not have cognitive impairments. So if those individuals are willing to talk to you, it might be worth your while to, while you're taking pictures and gathering evidence, to talk to them about it if they're open to it,
and document the steps that you've taken. You know, I on February 2nd I found a small abrasion on mother's back. And I notified Kathy Johnson. I'm making up all these names. Kathy Johnson, the director of nursing, who said this and this. On February 20th, I noticed that the abrasion gotten larger, and I noticed the charge nurse, you know, Tammy Richardson, and she said this, like, if you can do things like that, the more evidence you have, the better.
That's right.
Always.
That's right. And obviously, if your loved one has little or no cognitive impairments, talk to them.
Yeah.
Find out where did that abrasion come from? Where did this bruise come from? These type of things. Gather as much evidence, time, date.
Yes.
As you possibly can.
Because that's going to help. Did you have one more on this one?
Yeah, I was going to say medical records.
Medical records, absolutely. Go ahead and request those medical records.
And how do you do that?
You can go to the director of nursing and say, I'd like to get mom's or dad's medical records. I mean, that is how you would go about doing it as the family member of the loved one. It's as simple as that, and they're either going to give them to you or they're not. And if they don't, they may tell you why, and you can try to remedy that by going, well, here's a HIPAA that mom signed, but at the end of the day,
or a power of attorney.
At the end of the day, it is a less formal process than what we have to go through. Just go and say, "Hey, I want mama's medical records from February to March. Can I get those?"
And depending on if you have the requisite power of attorney or just a written authorization to review medical records, you can do that to all of your loved one's medical providers. So if your loved one went to a hospital, you can get the hospital records, primary care physician, all of those, you can get those records. And as we've explained in previous podcasts, medical records can be very important in understanding whether or not there's been neglect. Medical records can tell you whether or not, for example, nursing staff have responded to obvious signs of distress or infection. Medical records can tell you whether or not your loved one has been repositioned in a timely fashion, because these are the types of notes that should be indicated in your loved one's nursing home records. So records are very, very important, and it's good to get those right off the bat. But again, if you don't, or they give you, you know, they tell you to go pound sand, then obviously you can have an attorney do it. But that will be later on in step four. But anyway, yeah.
So to
summarize,
tell staff,
get involved in terms of the staff level. Let them know that you've pointed out that there's possibility that your loved one has fallen through the cracks. They need to take care of it. Second thing is to gather as much evidence as you can in the form of photographs, talking to other people if possible, getting medical records. The third thing to do...
The reason why those two things are important is that it sets you up for 3 and 4. Because 3 and 4 is where you have done everything that you can do. You've told the staff, you've gotten all the records, you've taken photographs, you've gotten evidence, and now it's out of your hands. So 3 and 4 is you're going to outside help. And 3 would be you're going to either Department of Community Health or an ombudsman.
Okay, so going to an ombudsman, what does that mean?
So ombudsmen are they're legal representatives employed by the state that can assist individuals with issues in long-term care facilities. So there's specific long-term care ombudsmen in the state of Georgia. And I think we mentioned in a former podcast, it's just a term that means legal representative. But they can be the voice of your loved one. So if you've got an issue and you've told the staff and you've tried to resolve this, and you know they're still not taking care of it, call your ombudsman. You can go to aging.georgia.gov and find out who your ombudsman is, and then have them come in, show them the evidence that you've accumulated, and say, "Please help me." And so they can get involved and try to resolve the issue.
You can also, aside from calling the ombudsman, you can also file a complaint with the Department of Community Health. And so what the Department of Community Health does is they're in charge with basically at various intervals doing a survey, doing an audit of nursing homes, whether or not nursing homes that are receiving federal funding are following the rules and federal rules and regulations of running a nursing home. So, for example, making sure that there's adequate staff, making sure that that the residents that are physician's orders are being followed. They do random samples, and that happens at regular intervals. But when sometimes when there's a complaint that is filed, sometimes they'll send a surveyor over there based on that complaint, and they will do an investigation based on that complaint, depending on how severe the complaint is. And they'll go out and they'll interview people involved, and they'll issue a report, and there's possibly will be citations involved.
Yeah, and this is something that we've talked about in the past, is what the different punishments that CMS or DCH may dole out to a nursing home can be everything from, you know, a request that they, you know, alter a certain procedure to a complete denial of CMS benefits, which would essentially shut the place down. Barring that, and something important that we want to make sure you understand is that these are not necessarily, it's not as though that we're giving you the steps that you must follow one after the other. And the reason that I say that is because we have time and time again stressed that there are some things that may be better suited to DCH or an ombudsman. There are some things that might be better suited to what you find in step number four, which are attorneys, contact an attorney. So, you know, if you've got a situation where your mother or your father has a catastrophic injury, it's not as though you have to contact DCH or an ombudsman before you move on to number four, which is contact an attorney. That's somebody
right.
Like us.
That's right. So contacting an attorney is going to be important because of, a whole host of reasons. The first of which is that the attorney understands things like statute of limitations, how long you have to file a claim in order to preserve it.
Mm-hmm.
The attorney knows case value. So in other words, whether or not this is something that would be worth pursuing in a court of law. An attorney's going to know if you're getting stonewalled with regard to medical records. They know how to request those medical records and get them heard or get them to you. An attorney is going to know how to put a facility on notice of a claim and therefore require, at least in Georgia, require them to hold on to evidence and not get rid of it. These are things that an attorney can do for you as they pursue and investigate a potential nursing home abuse claim. So contacting an attorney can be very important part of this process. And as Will said, these 1, 2, 3, and 4 are not necessarily what would happen in every single case. It's just a general rule of thumb.
General overview, like a guidance. General guidance, you know, is that letting staff know what's going on, getting evidence, and then telling somebody outside of the nursing home, getting help from somebody outside of the nursing home.
That's right. So number one
is let the staff know.
Number two. Number two.
Is get evidence.
Number three.
Tell DCH or an ombudsman.
Number four.
Is contact an attorney.
And that's, ladies and gentlemen, fair viewer, fair listener, is the recommendations from us as of today's date on the four things to do if you suspect that your loved one has been abused or neglected in a nursing home. Those will probably serve you well. What else do we want to talk about today? Looks like we have a article from, this deals with a nursing home in Charleston, South Carolina. Donna Carpena, daughter of Judith Ross, has filed a complaint against Diane Drive Operations and Genesis Healthcare for negligence in the death of her mother, a resident of a nursing home. Judith died of gastrointestinal bleeding and septic shock. And the crux of this lawsuit, according to this article, is that the nursing home's delay in recognizing the symptoms of gastrointestinal bleeding. According to the complaint, the estate of Ms. Ross alleges that the defendants, the nursing home, failed to immediately report her complaints and distraught behavior to a physician, failed to immediately call for emergency transport, and failed to train and supervise the staff regarding the same. And that's time and time again, you will see that with nursing home neglect claims, the actual original injury is not the cause or the basis of the lawsuit. It's how the nursing home reacts to that injury. So,
and to clarify, what Rob is saying is that it does not have to be the cause. It can be the cause, but it isn't a requirement that it's a cause.
That's right. So in other words, the nursing home in this case, why she has gastrointestinal bleeding, I'm not sure. It could be from a procedure from a hospital. Mm-hmm. It could be from some biological reason that she has that is, either way is
could,
no
is could no, be a PEG tube that came could, loose. Yeah, could be anything.
Either way, it could possibly that cause of that could not be based on the nursing home's acts. Okay. The issue here is the fact that once you see a status change in a resident, once you see a resident either complain of intestinal pain, show signs like high fever, like spike in blood sugar, some type of observable empirical sign that that the resident is undergoing a change, particularly under distress, they have a duty to not only notify family, but to notify physicians, to notify a medical provider, and if so, take her to the emergency room.
Yeah.
So that's going to be the basis of this case, and that's what the family of this individual that passed at a nursing home is going to have to do. It's going to have to say, based on the evidence that we have, which is the medical records and the testimony of the nurses on hand at that nursing home, should they have done something sooner? And then, importantly, even if the nursing home had acted sooner, would that have prevented her death?
Exactly. So that's another question you have is that, let's say that you have two possible cases of negligence. Did they cause the original injury? No. Okay. Once they found out, did they do what they were supposed to? No. Okay. But even if they didn't do what they were supposed to. So even if you get that far and you go, okay, well, at least we have one of those negligences covered. Then the question is, yeah, but did that final negligence, is that the cause of her death? And if it's not, then it doesn't matter. So they could have been negligent in one of two ways, in two of two ways. But it still could be the case that at the end of the day, that's not what caused her ultimate injury or ultimate damages, which in this case would be death.
That's right. So that's what stuck out to me in that particular case is that it's basically the arguments that are going to have to be made in order to prove that the nursing home was liable. Moving to a different part of the country.
But something that still, you know, resonates with what we've just talked about, which is what do they do? What a nursing home supposed to do after an accident or an incident? And in this particular one, we're in Buffalo, New York, where lawmakers are discussing proposed legislation called Ruthie's Law. Ruthie's Law, mm-hmm. Yeah, in the memory of a woman who, what happened to her? She fell and was injured?
The nursing home failed to accurately notify and share details of her fatal injuries that led up to her death. Let's see. The proposed legislation known as Ruthie's Law, in her memory, requires nursing homes to notify legal guardians within 1 hour of an injury if hospitalization is required. The proposed law, as written, gives the county attorney the power to subpoena and review nursing home injury reports.
And this is something I fully support. I don't know for the life of me why this isn't standard throughout the country. We often get as a major complaint from potential clients the issue that the nursing home didn't let them know what was going on. Now, a failure to let you know what's going on is not a link in the chain. It's not proof of causation.
Of
the injury. So, and that is something that people confuse oftentimes. They'll say, well, you know, mom fell, and then, you know, later she died, and also they didn't tell me about it, so I think that they're negligent. No, that's the causal link between her injury and her death is not evidenced by their failure to tell you. However, I do think that requiring nursing homes to immediately, within 1 hour, inform guardians and loved ones will decrease injuries, ultimate injuries to residents, because family members then are put on notice that the loved one has fallen, and they're probably going to say, hopefully, hey, have you taken her to the ER to check her out? So it's going to put the nursing home in a position where they're going to be required to do more for specific instances of, you know, immediate injuries like falling or cutting or an altered mental status, so that it can cut down on overall damages to nursing home residents, I think.
Yeah. So, in other words, thumbs up to this proposed legislation.
Absolutely.
Two thumbs way up.
Yeah. Way up.
All right. For the record, we were giving two thumbs up apiece.
Two thumbs up apiece.
So, moving on, this is going to be the last article I've got for today. This is actually coming to us from Missouri. A nursing home patient dies after catching fire while smoking. So we have here 83-year-old Donna Chapman died after catching fire while smoking in her wheelchair at NHC Healthcare in St. Charles, Missouri. Chapman, partly paralyzed, was wheeled onto the nursing home's patio and left there alone to smoke a cigarette and then caught fire. The fire department reported that she suffered third-degree burns as the clothing surrounding her ignited.
And this is one of those issues that encompasses a resident's right to pursue happiness, to be a human, to do what they want to do. I can't tell you how many times I had family members come in to the nursing home and say things like, well, we don't want Mama smoking anymore. So we don't want you taking her out and letting her smoke. Well, you know, I got news for you. She created you and gave birth to you. She's an adult. She's cognizant. So she's going to do this if she wants to. But where you have an issue is in a situation like this where the resident has some problems. And here the resident is partially paralyzed. Because of a previous stroke. So my issue here isn't that you were letting her smoke. She should smoke. I don't care if a nursing home resident has cancer and the doctor said, if you smoke another cigarette, it will kill you. So what? Right? You're free to be as unhealthy as you want to be. And all of those family members who are shoving Big Macs in their face and getting congestive heart failure set up have no place to say, well, I don't want Mama smoking. It's not good for her anymore. Who cares? If she wants to, she can. But if Mama is partially paralyzed and may have trouble holding on to that cigarette, it is incumbent upon the nursing home to have somebody stand there with her. Now, it may be that there's limited staff to take this resident out every single time she smokes. So it may not be that every single time Miss Johnson wants to go have a cigarette, she can go have a cigarette, because they would have to have somebody stand there and watch her just in case she drops it and can't pick it up. But she should still be allowed. But absolutely, they should have had somebody out there watching her, because, you know, she's not...
This particular case.
They should have had somebody out there watching her.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a very tragic, sad incident.
And, you know, one of the last nursing homes that I worked at would not allow the staff to smoke on the grounds. And I think that's a great idea, first of all, for any business. I don't think staff should ever be allowed to smoke. If I owned any business whatsoever, even if it was a tobacco shop, I don't want employees smoking.
Man, when I waited tables.
Oh, no, of course. Restaurants. Oof, yeah.
I had to have my cigarettes.
But the only exception to this was that residents were allowed to smoke. But when you took a resident out, and I'm thinking of a woman very distinctly who, in my mind, pretty much matches the issues that this woman had, because I can recall standing out there with her in rain. We were, you know, protected from the elements from above, but, it, you know, in rain, sleet, snow, cold, hot, whatever, One of us had to stand out there with her.
Speaking of smoking,
yeah.
Oftentimes smokers, while doing their work, will say, hey, can I have a smoke break? And I'm asking, not as I'm a former smoker, I haven't smoked in 14 years, but I'm actually going to require a smoke break from this episode because we have reached the conclusion of this episode, episode 33 of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. You can download or watch new episodes of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast every Monday morning. They're available on iTunes or Stitcher, where you can download the audio, or you can watch us on our website, which is nursinghomeabusepodcast.com, or on our YouTube channel. We appreciate your time and attention, and we will see you next time.
See you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Please be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, and feel free to leave us some feedback. And for more information about the topics discussed in this episode, check out the show website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. That's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.